Welcome to the How Did They Do It Real Estate Podcast. Have you ever wondered how people succeed in real estate and what steps they took to get there? If so, this podcast is for you. Your hosts, Sayla and Eileen Prack, interview top experts in the real estate community to share with you their real estate journey and how they achieved massive success. Our goal is to provide you with valuable real estate resources and to help you apply it to your own real estate goals. Welcome everyone to today's episode of the How Did They Do It Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Eileen Prack. And today our guest is Mike DeHaan, and he has a fabulous background. So I don't want to give too much of it away because I really want to deep dive into some of that. There's a lot that goes into his background about how he was able to leave the corporate world without much of a plan, was able to build up his own business, and within 2 years, hired staff and improved his systems to over 17 people now on his team, doing deals in 9 different markets across the United States. He's also a podcast host himself, and he runs his own national mastermind. So this is going to be a really fantastic episode. We really want to find out how you've been able to do it, Mike. I know you've been able to generate quite a bit of passive income for yourself through your ventures. So please share with us. And welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks, Eileen. Appreciate you having me. Yeah, so I mean, the kind of background I have is, you know, kind of standard, starts off like most people do, went to college, went and got an engineering degree, did that, you know, had a standard job that I started right out of school. I was an engineer for about 5 years. And like a lot of people, especially I feel like the younger generation, right, got into the workforce and wasn't super satisfied, was in that sort of process of going to meetings, doing the whole corporate game. I was like, is this really what life is all about? I don't know. So after 5 years doing that, I basically decided I had enough and I quit. I didn't have any real plan. When I left, all I knew was I wanted to do anything except that. So I dabbled in a bunch of different things. You know, I thought about going back to school. I worked in a gym. That's kind of like a side gig. And I was like, maybe I'll go back and be a physical therapist. You know, I started to learn about just business and passive income in general. So I was dabbling, you know, in e-commerce and doing digital marketing and, you know, all the other things that you can find any influencer on Instagram that'll be like, this is how you do it, right? Like I was just like a sucker for anything that would, like, you know, people were trying to sell their dream with, you know. So I got down at all these different things, trying to figure it out for a couple of years. 2018 through 2020, I kind of just spun my wheels and just tried a bunch of different stuff. In that period of time, in those 2 years, I started to dabble in real estate a little bit, primarily just through learning and listening to podcasts and reading books and all that sort of stuff, just because I knew that it seemed like the most direct way to be able to generate passive income. It's kind of an immediate fashion, right? I was like, if I buy a rental property, I'll start getting passive income, versus a lot of the other methods involve building businesses and these things that were a little bit more tricky. So that kind of got my brain going. And then I guess at the end of 2018, I bought my first rental properties, which I still own to this day. In order to do that, I basically liquidated my corporate 401k that I'd built up over 5 years as an engineer. And I was like, I'll just buy these 2 turnkey houses, these like single family rentals, which it's funny in hindsight, like they were pretty poor cash flow investments at the time because I had no idea what I was doing. Like, I was like, oh, these will be easy. So I bought them and I was like, oh, my mortgage payment will be $1,200 a month. I'll be able to rent them for $1,500 a month. It's like, I want to make $300, you know, each one. Like, this will be great. But of course, when you have management set aside, all that sort of stuff, that's not how it works. So that kind of got me in the door and also kind of hamstringed me a little bit because all of a sudden all my capital was gone. So after that, I recognized that my opportunity to buy had kind of dissipated with my capital. So I started going to meetups. And I was like, okay, I need to start generating some more capital. What's the best way to do that? And I was like, oh, maybe I could start flipping houses, right? And this was all kind of on the side while I was still trying to, you know, figure out if I like another sort of career, which is making it extra complicated. So I was, you know, dabbling in different startups and things like that as I was, you know, wasn't in real estate full time. But anyway, I went to these meetups, started connecting with people. And I was like, I have the ability to bring hustle. You people have money, you have opportunities, like let's partner up and we'll split it 50-50. And I ended up finding a couple that they were very cash heavy. They wanted to flip houses. They didn't want to do any of the dirty work. And that's exactly what we did. So going through 2019, I flipped a couple of houses. And then at the end of 2019, I started to see the opportunities were fewer and further between. So I basically made the executive decision that I need to start finding opportunities myself. You know, in that period of time, like wholesaler margins were huge. They were basically squeezing the most of the end buyers and the flippers for the most of the profit on these deals. The retail flipping market was getting more and more difficult. So we ended up just starting, you know, sending mailers, everything you can learn about on YouTube. We just started, you know, marketing that way, right? So that was beginning of 2020. COVID made our start super interesting. It took us 6 months. Me and my business partner took us 6 months to get our first deal going through that method, mainly because we had no sales experience or business experience at all. So we had to just kind of do trial by fire with that. And then, you know, over the next couple of years, after we got our first deal, we just kept recycling that money, putting it back into the business and growing. And then now fast forward about 2.5 years, we've grown pretty exponentially, and we're, you know, have 17 staff, and we're currently operating in 9 different markets, mostly in the residential space, but we do some commercial stuff as well as they come through our marketing funnels. And yeah, so it's kind of the, I guess, maybe 6 minute version of me.
So going back to your background a little bit. So when you decided to leave that corporate job, you said you had no plan whatsoever. There was not too much of a lifeline or a plan. What were you going to do afterwards? Like, I guess, was that decision made really quickly, or did it take some time to be able to quit? And especially a lot of people, you know, I don't know if there was some type of like event that was just like, this is it, I'm done with this, I need to go figure out what I want to be when I grow up, you know, or that decision kind of takes some time before you made that life-changing decision.
Yeah. So it did take a little bit of time. I guess my decision to quit happened very quickly, but the thought process to get to that took several years. So going backwards before that, you know, I was working at Boeing out in Seattle, which is like as corporate gets, right? And in early 2016, my dad had a stroke. He had a really serious stroke, and he was in the neuro ICU. You know, we were living in Seattle. He was down in Southern California in the ICU for, it was like 6 weeks. And basically he went to the hospital and he was given like a 10% chance to live. And he was on, you know, super high alert and all sort of stuff. So me and my wife, we traveled down there and we lived out of the hospital with my mom. So in that period of time, you know, when you're kind of going through that, he was very healthy going into that. It was a very like sort of a freak situation. And you kind of start to contemplate life and you're just like, he went from being extremely healthy to all of a sudden his life could be ending. But to make it worse, in those 6 weeks that I was down there, every day for 6 weeks, I got calls from Boeing HR wanting to know why I wasn't at work, because I didn't have the appropriate vacation time to be down there. And they were just threatening me with termination and, you know, all these different disciplinary things and whatever. And that kind of like got me going of like, I don't know if this corporate environment is the right thing for me. And then after that, I entered a pretty dark depression, which I struggled with for quite a long time. And then ultimately, you know, I dealt with that for a couple of years. And then going into the end of 2017, it's funny, I remember I was actually driving to work one day and I was listening to a podcast. I wish I could remember what it was, but something in me just clicked. It was, I think it was a Bigger Pockets podcast, and they were talking about, you know, passive income, or it was maybe it was Tim Ferriss podcast, something like that. Something just clicked, and I called my wife. I'm on the way to work and I was like, I think I need to quit my job. Like, I just don't think I can do this anymore. And it was about a month after that that I quit. And, you know, we had a talk about it. You know, she had an okay job and was able to help support like our basic bills. And then I did have savings from the years of working as an engineer, which helped as well. But, you know, ultimately she was supportive because she was like, I just don't want you to be this miserable person anymore. And, you know, I had faith in myself to be able to figure something out. Honestly, the hardest conversation was with my parents because, you know, they came from a background of, you know, go to college, you get a degree. Like that was the path that they had sort of envisioned. And all of a sudden I'm leaving. It's honestly a really good career.
You're an aerospace engineer.
Right. Exactly. Like that's, you know, everyone wants to be able to say their kids do that. And I was just like, yeah, I'm just not gonna do that anymore. And they're like, what are you gonna do? I was like, I don't know. I'll figure something out. Like that's not what any parent wants to hear. So yeah, like it was a long process, but the ultimate trigger was very quick.
That's amazing to hear how you are able to, you know, it's interesting how like information passes by every single day, but you tend to latch on to like one thing that could be the trajectory and change in your life. And it just so happened to that one thing that you heard on the podcast had changed your whole perspective and your whole outlook, and then allowed you to make a decision that was going to basically change how you looked at life and where you wanted your life to go.
Yeah. I wish I could remember what it was. And it's interesting though too, because in those couple of years before that, I felt very much alone, part of my depression, and then just being, you know, in this career that was full of a lot of other people that were honestly depressed as well. I'm a big believer of like, you're the five people that you spend the most time with. You've heard that before. You're some of the five people you spend the most time with. And it's funny reflecting on that. The five people I spent the most time with were my wife and then like business motivational sort of podcasters, right? So eventually, like, I think it just sort of built up and I was like, oh, I'm now like equal to them and I just need to do what they're doing, right? So it's just, you know, kind of interesting.
So when you made the move to quit after that, you dabbled into a lot of different other ventures. Mm-hmm. So it didn't sound like you got into real estate like right away, but you were listening to other real estate podcasts and some of those Bigger Pockets podcasts, it sounds like, during that time. Mm-hmm. What made you get into real estate after trying all these different ventures, all these other different businesses? What led you to real estate eventually?
Yeah. So with real estate, I mean, you read anything about wealth or business or passive income, real estate comes up, right? So it's one of the most proven, easy ways, sort of like, I mean, really guaranteed ways to generate wealth if you wait long enough. So that was always kind of on the forefront of my mind. And then the original sort of push to get into it was I had a friend who's actually my now business partner who started getting into rental properties. He was buying student rentals. So I was kind of connecting with him and learning like the basic process from it. And then finally I was like, well, he's doing this. Like I could probably do this too. And that sort of gave me the confidence, I guess, to jump into it. So
after you did your first deal, you started seeing some traction in what you were doing in real estate. At what point did you start seeing a upward trend, more of a spike into what you're doing? Did you do something differently within your business to continue to grow it much faster and stronger than what you have been doing previously?
Yeah. So there's like a series of spikes that I can pinpoint very vividly when, you know, if I reflect back on like the different points. So obviously I bought my first rental. I would say the next big spike that I started to notice was when I bought my first flip with those partners that I mentioned. And that was when I kind of came to the realization of like, oh, I'm like doing this legit now. I now own, when I got the keys and I walked into this house that had needed so much work, it was such a disaster. And I was like, now like an investor, like this is a project I'm going to put together, reinforcing equity, all those sort of things. So there was that. And then that was sort of like the first jump into it. And then I would say the next big catalyst was after we started marketing and we got our first off-market deal, which was a wholesale deal. The one that we got after 6 months of marketing, we got a wholesale deal and it was just $8,000 on an assignment fee. And all of a sudden it was like money, right? You know, and I had $8,000 check, which at the time, like that used to be a month's worth of pay, you know, when I was working at Boeing. So I was like, cool, we just got that. And that was like not that hard. So there was that. And then the real biggest catalyst was, you know, after we got our first deal, we spent a few months really sort of trying to figure it out, struggling, not doing awesome. We brought on our first sales manager, our first acquisitions manager. And when she brought her in the first 2 weeks, she got us 7 deals and we made, I think it was $112,000 in income. And all of a sudden I was like, whoa, we just made what I used to make in a year in a month, you know, and that was started to cascade everything for us where, you know, we started to get real money. We rolled that right back into the business. And we started to scale, building out our systems and started, you know, delegating, building out our team. And from there, it's just been sort of exponential growth. So
when you bought your first flip, there was like 2 first milestones that you had mentioned. You bought your first flip and then you're also your first rental. And then at one point it finally clicked into your mind that, hey, I am an investor. And so, you know, I think a lot of times there is that doubt or that little voice in our head that says, oh, are you legitimate? It's that imposter syndrome kind of thing that you don't really put yourself in that shoes or you don't see yourself a certain way. So like the role that you actually want to be in because there's that like self-doubt that's behind it. And so for you, after that kind of clicked and you said, hey, I am an investor, that kind of moved you forward and you started looking at the things that you're doing as a real business to be able to grow and to hire on other people and look at other things as well, not just, you know, just that one individual deal.
Yeah, for sure. I wouldn't say it helped with imposter syndrome at all. I mean, I still do that all the time. I don't think
there's always that little voice there.
Yeah, right. You know, especially because it happened so quickly. But it did give us the confidence in proof of concept that we knew that if we brought people on, that we would be able to be successful. And, you know, it kind of graduated from instead of being like, how we're going to do this to who's going to help us grow this. Right. Once you kind of know the basic steps of it. And even now, as we have staff come and go, we go through these different processes, there's never like this sort of fear and doubt about is the business going to work, because we've already proven it, right? So it's now it's just how do we bring in the right characters to help us, you know, take it to the next level. And that was kind of the biggest transition, I guess, to being a business owner versus just like a one-man operator.
We love hosting this show. When we started this podcast, we were doing all the editing and post-production ourselves. Now, we are very excited to have this particular company as a partner of the show to do all the post-production for us, because it gives us the freedom to focus on the two things we care about, serving you, our listener, at a higher level, and growing our own multifamily business. If you are like Sayla and me, then you want to add value to others while scaling your business. A podcast is the best way to do both, and we invite you to contact Adam Adams. He can help you launch your podcast, market your show for more listeners, and take all the post-production off your plate so you can focus on your business instead of in it. Listeners of this show can get a free consultation with Adam. To schedule your free consultation, find the link in the show notes. And how do you look at it now? Because you're still actively working within real estate, but you're taking all that money and you're generating passive income through all this as well. So how did that come into play? Like, how did you start investing in the business? And then how did you generate enough to start doing it passively and start generating the passive income so that you're able to have your money working harder for you?
Yeah. So we've always bought a lot of rentals. So a lot of our passive income comes from that. You know, over the number of years, kind of our concept has been, well, you know, we'll wholesale or we'll flip kind of like the props that we're not interested in, and we'll keep the best stuff. So, you know, we've built a pretty sizable rental portfolio over the last couple of years. And then in terms of making the business itself more passive, we've been very diligent about systematizing and, you know, documenting and building our processes in a way that it's easy to outsource or give to an employee. And so even now, like, I still work in the business every day, but I have the ability to not if I don't need to. I just spend most of my time working on the business, and the business kind of runs. So, I mean, even 2 weeks ago, I was in Spain. Me and my wife, we spent 2.5 weeks traveling around Spain. And, you know, while I was there, I think we got 3 contracts. You know, we had 100-something leads come in. You know, we made, I think it was like 20-something offers. And I wasn't working at all while I was there. But, you know, we have the systems, we have the staff people, we have buy-in from the team, and they're just, you know, able to keep rolling without me having to have my hands in it. So for the most part, it is, I guess you could say, passive, and it works out pretty well. So
one of the things you had also mentioned was, you know, you started doing some marketing and aspects of it as well. What kind of marketing were you doing to start generating those leads so that you can continue to build up the business? You had enough deal flow coming in to sustain your model.
Yeah. So we've been very heavy on direct mail ever since the start. Just as, you know, basic as it can get. Like, we do different kinds of like letters and postcards. And over the last 2.5 years, we've tried a number of different things and basically found our own little formula of like a mailing sequence that works with all the different markets that we go to. And, you know, that's, we've tried everything else, you know, calling, texting, online marketing, whatever, but the direct mail has been tried and true, our most consistent producer. And it's funny because a lot of people, they tend to avoid direct mail because it has kind of like a heavy upfront cost, but it also has like a lingering effect. I mean, even today, I think my guy got deal signed around this morning, one of my guys here locally, and it was a letter that we sent out, I want to say in January, that he chose to call us yesterday for some reason, you know, because he'd been sitting on his kitchen counter for 6 months and he decided to call us, and we got it signed around this morning. So that's been our best marketing source.
Oh, that's exciting. It's like you put these out there, you planted these seeds out over there, and now you're starting to see the little plants pop up. You're starting to see it grow into fruition.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, it's been good. And then, you know, going forward into stuff, one of the biggest sort of transitions we're making with the market, we were extremely transactional over the last year, primarily just because the market was so insane. It was hard not to be, you know, like we would get deals that we were planning to keep, But then we would look at what the properties were worth, and we're like, well, we could keep it and we could make some more cash flow off of it. It's like, or we could sell it on, you know, for way more than we anticipated and make like $80,000 to $100,000. So that was kind of like an easy trade-off. And we still kept a lot of stuff, but how we're shifting forwards is looking at raising money to be keeping significantly more, doing kind of like syndications and partnerships, particularly with a lot of the multifamilies that we find. So we pretty regularly find, you know, things like 6 to 15 unit style properties and looking to raise money to be able to keep those ones and do some larger projects with those rather than selling them off. So I think that as interest rates change, buyer pool gets a little bit smaller, that's going to be a more sound method to pursue deals for pretty much everyone if you're able to raise money and actually close on stuff. So
that's so cool. I mean, if you think about it back, you know, a lot of people are could be in very similar shoes as you in your working your corporate jobs. They could feel like they're stuck in that job, that there's no way that like I have to do this, you know, like if I don't work, I don't make the money. Mm-hmm. And so if somebody also wanted to start generating some other additional passive income from themselves, do some things in real estate, if you were to go back to yourself, would you follow those same steps as you did and focus 100% in real estate, or would you have done a little bit slightly different path just knowing what you know now today?
Yeah, it's an interesting question because so when I quit my job, you know, I had a relatively high income, you know, my wife was making good money, like by all intents and purposes, we'd kind of made it. And, you know, when I quit, our income dropped by like 75%, you know, and so we made the decision to basically cut back all luxuries in our life. We really, really got super frugal. You know, we went from being able to afford pretty much anything we kind of wanted on a regular basis to cutting coupons over the course of like a month, right? And that struggle for the couple of years that we did that, I think gave me the character and, you know, like the determination to do as well with my business as I have. Because I mean, you know, I might make it sound like it came together really well and it was super easy, but it wasn't. You know, I've had so many sleepless nights. I've had 80 to 100 hour work weeks. Like there's been times where me and my partner thought we were going to like be in a really bad situation. We were able to get out of them. So like if I went back now and I kind of just started what I was doing right away, I don't think I would be successful. You know, I think you kind of have to have that struggle to be able to, you know, build that fortitude to be able to handle the ups and downs of being an entrepreneur. You know, there's a reason so many big entrepreneurs, they have stories about like being homeless or like, you know, coming from really rough backgrounds. And it's because that helps you get through the difficulties of being a business owner yourself. So
then Mike, for you, what's next? I mean, you're able to generate good passive income for yourself now. You're able to provide, you know, for yourself and for your family. You're traveling across the world. What's next for you? And I also want to kind of point this out too, because you talk about something location independent businesses as well. And I kind of wanted to get into that a little bit and what you meant by that. But I also want to find out what's next for you.
Yeah. And that's a great question. Actually, me and my business partner, we had that talk the other day because we're both in kind of a similar spot and we're at a position now where do we want to keep growing this business? Like, do we want to double down and make it huge? Do we just want to keep it, you know, at like its current level and just look to, you know, stack money and like buy more opportunities? I think the next thing we're kind of looking for is starting to raise money to keep a lot more of the properties that we find and build some of that longer term wealth and those larger income opportunities from that. But bigger picture, I mean, like I'm not entirely sure yet. So trying to do some soul searching can figure that out because, you know, I do enjoy it and it is great. We are doing very well, but it's also, I guess the biggest thing that we always talk about is it would be great to have a business that wasn't so heavily dependent on the economy, right? You know, if housing prices, the economy goes sideways, the business gets much more challenging. And by the nature of our business, we've been able to do pretty well as things are starting to get funny, but it's definitely trickier than it was. Whereas, you know, you look at a company like, I don't know, like Lululemon, right? Like someone who like sells something, like they're probably going to be the same regardless of what the economy is doing, you know? So we've talked about trying to find businesses that are a little bit more recession proof and things like that, but we'll see.
And so Mike, how has real estate investing impacted your life so far?
Yeah. So, I mean, made a huge change in my life, right? Like I went from being a corporate sort of salaryman my whole life to being able to do what I do now. You know, I've made more money over the last couple of years than I was expecting to make over my entire career and build an incredible amount of wealth in a very short period of time, mostly just because of the way that we do our business, where we buy assets at such a large discount. And for those things, like, I mean, I don't really know if there was another way that I could have done that, that would have required a significant amount of luck, you know, because a lot of the stuff that we did too, it's not like it's rocket science. Like, it's very repeatable. You know, I have friends and colleagues that started same time as we did from different masterminds and things that I'm in that are in the exact same position, and they just follow the same process over the same period of time and put in the work. And I know that's super cliche to say, but literally anyone can do it if they're willing to be a bit uncomfortable for a while.
And what is the one thing that sets the successful people apart in real estate investing?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is probably patience. So, like, so many people, they try to jump into opportunities that they don't entirely understand. Or what they'll do is they'll pursue, like, the shiny object syndrome, and they'll be like, I'm going to flip houses. I'm also going to syndicate apartments. I'm also going to be a wholesaler. I'm also going to get my real estate license. And those are all viable paths to do very well, but people aren't patient enough with each one. And I mean, I'm not going to lie, over the years, we explored doing so many different things, especially when, you know, we were trying to generate leads and we're like, well, this is hard. Maybe we should go get our licenses and be realtors. And I'm like, well, like, that takes too much work. Maybe we should just, like, flip houses and stop wholesaling. So I don't have to work as hard on the sales side. And if we'd done that, I guarantee we wouldn't be as successful as we are now. But we committed, you know, to be patient through the marketing process, learn the systems, and just did, you know, did the boring stuff. We're super consistent over a long period of time. And I think that most people don't do that. And that's one of the reasons it's hard for people to be successful.
As you started out and you started seeing success in your business, did you guys give yourself a time frame or something like that to say, let's see how the business goes for X number of years? And if it continues to grow, we'll continue with this. If it doesn't generate what we think we're going to generate, let's pivot and change paths. Did you guys have that conversation, or did that never come up?
It's funny. People have asked me that several times, and I don't think we did. And looking back on it, that's kind of funny, because I feel like that would have been the responsible thing to do. But, you know, I think the benefit of going into business with, you know, he's my best friend, and, like, we're kind of in a situation that neither of us wanted to quit first. So basically we just kept making it happen, right? And
it's accountability, you know, to each other.
Exactly. 100%. And I actually even used to say that to my wife when I was getting so burned out on some of these difficult times. And I'd be like, man, you know, tell you what, if I wasn't partnering with Dan, I would have quit this business. Like, this is so hard. It's like, but I'm not willing to do that with the amount of struggle that he's put into it. And it's funny. And then me and him talked about that a little while ago. And he's like, I used to say the same thing to my wife. We're like, oh, well, there we go. Like, that's the key right there. Right. So, you know, it's never even crossed our mind. Failure was just never an option. And I mean, it could have gone the opposite way. We could have done poorly if we didn't perform, but we just weren't willing to give up. So.
Yeah. And I think especially within real estate, it's like the consistent action over time that you'll end up seeing it. A lot of times, like what you were saying, kind of mentioning a little bit earlier before, it's especially in today's market, everybody, or not today's market, but environment, everybody has that, like, instant gratification. Like, I want it now. I want to see the results today. But it's not really like that when you're looking at real estate and looking to invest in the long term of things. It's over time, you'll be able to, you know, accumulate that wealth, build it up, but it does take the time. It does take a little bit of, or quite a bit of effort, actually.
It does. Yeah. And going back to that patience as well, right? Like, being willing to sit on stuff and, you know, solve it over a longer period of time than you want to, you know, like those first properties I bought that I mentioned that, you know, like, had like the $1,200 a month payment. I was able to rent for $1,500. The cash flow was really poor on those. And there was a period of time where I was like, man, I should just, like, sell these at, like, a loss. Because, you know, I need that money back to be able to invest, but I didn't. I decided to ride it out. And now I cash flow an incredible amount on both those properties. And I mean, this past year, because of how the market went, the interest rates, I was able to do a cash out refinance and pull out almost equivalent the amount of money that I bought the properties for each one, you know, and still maintain most of my cash flow because of how much rents had gone up with the interest rates going down. So, I mean, that was only, like, what, 3 years ago at that point. So it's like, that was sort of an eye opener right there. It's like, oh yeah, just gotta, you know, buy real estate and wait, as they say.
Right. Well, Mike, I appreciate coming on the show and sharing all that with us. It's super exciting to see what you and your partner have been able to do so far and where you guys will continue to go.
Yeah, thanks, Eileen. Appreciate it.
And so for our listeners out there also who want to find out more about you, check out your podcast, where's the best place that they can go?
Yeah, so we have our own podcast. It's called the Collecting Keys Real Estate Investing Podcast. The primary focus is basically running an off-market business. So if you want to know how to generate leads, you want to learn how we do our sales negotiations, how we structure our deals, all that sort of stuff. We talk really openly about it on there. So go check that out. And you can also hit me up on Instagram. I'm at Mike_invests. I always love to chat with anyone and feel free to send me a DM and I'll be happy to talk to you about whatever.
Awesome. Thank you so much again, Mike.
Awesome. Thanks, Eileen.
And thank you for listening to our podcast today, brought to you by Bonavest Capital. We would really appreciate it if you can go to iTunes right now and leave a rating and written review. Also, please don't forget to subscribe so you can always get the latest episodes. You can also connect with us on Facebook, How Did They Do It Real Estate. We'd love to hear your feedback and any topics that you're interested in for future episodes. If you're anything like Zayla and me and believe that real estate investing is a great way to create passive income and build long-term wealth, check out our free apartment syndication due diligence checklist for passive investors at bonavestcapital.com/checklist. Zayla and I created this checklist for ourselves as we evaluated different multifamily syndication opportunities as a passive investor. So we would love to share it with you so you can use it as a resource as well. Download your free copy today at bonavestcapital.com/checklist. Lastly, to learn more about us, you can go to bonavestcapital.com and fill out the contact us page so you can speak to us directly. Nothing on the show should be considered as specific personal advice. Please consult your legal, tax, and real estate professionals for individualized advice.